Have you ever forgotten to do something really, really obvious? When I was at school doing my A-levels, we went into an exam, and the exam had 10 essay questions. And the idea was you picked two of them, and over the 2 or 3 hours, you tackled those two essay questions. It was quite hard, but not impossible. And we did it, and we came out, and we were chatting. And my friend said to me, "I've never written so fast in my entire life. Can you believe it? 10 essay questions in 2 hours. That was nearly impossible." And I said to him, "That wasn't what it said. It actually said, here are 10 essay questions, select two of them." And when I said that, his face kind of fell. And he went, "Oh no." He'd forgotten to do the obvious thing that you do when you go into exam, read the question. He'd gone in, saw 10 essay questions, let's go, and started writing, but hadn't paused and read the instructions for the exam beforehand. Yesterday, I forgot to do something obvious. I thought I'd cut my lawn, so I got out our lawnmower. It's petrol-powered, and it's one of those ones where you have to yank the thing to get it started, you know, like that. So I was pulling this thing, and pulling it, and it wouldn't start. And I checked it had petrol in it, so I just put more petrol, just in case. And I was pulling it, and getting more and more angry and red in the face, doing my utmost not to use some choice Anglo-Saxon phrases at the lawnmower. And then, after completely wearing myself out and my arm was nearly dropping off, I remembered, and I saw there was this big red label saying, "Before starting, push button 3 times to prime." And I'd forgotten to do that. So I pushed, you know, it sort of, I think it pumps fuel into the engine or something. I pushed it, and on the first start, it started fine. I'd forgotten to do the obvious thing. And as we've just read in the passage from Joshua 9, the Israelites forgot to do something obvious, to do something crucial. When the Gibeonites came to them, they forgot to ask God for his guidance and his wisdom. They didn't bother to consult the Lord. And we see that in verse 14. The Israelites sampled the Gibeonites' provisions, but did not inquire of the Lord. So they did scrutinize how old the bread was and how cracked the wineskins were and stuff like that, but they did not consult God. This phrase is in Hebrew literally the mouth of Yahweh, they did not ask. So the Hebrew puts it very starkly, they did not ask God. They didn't say, "God, speak to us, what should we do here?" And as a result, they fell for the Gibeonites' ruse, and they made this treaty of peace that they were not supposed to make. God said, "You are allowed to make treaties with people from far away, but you're not allowed to make treaties of peace with those who live nearby." This ruse that the Gibeonites came up with was, they took a lot of effort and put a lot of work into it. It was very carefully crafted. They went to a lot of trouble. First of all, they put their provisions in worn-out sacks, and then they used these cracked, mended wineskins, and they had worn out and patched up sandals. They wore old clothes, as Johnny reminded us in the introduction. Their bread was dry and moldy. They mentioned, if you noticed, Egypt, Sion and Og, the conquests there, but they didn't mention the conquest of Jericho and Ai, to add authenticity to their made-up tale, because if they really were from a far country, they probably would have heard of Egypt, Sion, and Og, but the latest conquests were kind of newer news and more localized, so they wouldn't have heard of them. So they even thought that one through. And they used this phrase, "because of the fame of the Lord your God." That would have had a lot of emotional appeal to the Israelites. But it wasn't anything heartfelt. It was flattery dressed up as faith. And what the Israelites did is they depended on their senses. They analyzed the facts. They discussed it together. They asked all the right questions. You know, they didn't just say, "Fine, we'll make a treaty." They asked lots of questions. They agreed in their conclusion. This is Joshua and the leaders. It was all obvious, all logical, all convincing, but all wrong. They so needed God's divine insight at that point, but they just rushed ahead and didn't ask. Too easy, in a way. They thought they didn't need to. It was obvious. I mean, look at the bread and look at the sandals and so on. It's simple. Let's just do this thing. But it wasn't simple. It wasn't obvious. They made the decision themselves. They didn't stop and pause and ask God. It's noteworthy, I think, that this deception so closely follows their victory and the rededication in chapter 8. Flushed with their victory, they forget the fundamentals. They're blinded by their own insight. They ignore their need for God. They think we can do it. They just rushed ahead with their own plans, and the result, an angry people, an awkward treaty, and a potentially dangerous pagan influence right on their doorstep. They've landed themselves in trouble here. And you know, this is one of those passages that's like a mirror. We kind of read the passage in Joshua 9 and we kind of see ourselves. Because we often do the same thing, don't we? That's easy, we think. I've got this decision, I know what to do. And we rush in, but we don't stop and ask God for the wisdom that we need. Now, I'm not talking about unimportant decisions here. I'm not talking about every time we're at the supermarket, dear God, what flavour toothpaste should I buy and stuff like that. I'm talking about big things. The context tells us that, doesn't it? They were at the beginning of their conquest. They were conquering the land. This was a big deal. This was a people group. It needed thought. That's where we're thinking about the bigger decisions of life and the bigger issues of life. But we're like them a lot of the time. And so the first takeaway from the sermon is we need to ask God for wisdom and help and guidance, even if we think that we don't need it. Here's an interesting question. Do we only need God's wisdom when we're not sure? Well, no, we need God's wisdom all the time. We need to be really careful when we find ourselves thinking, I don't need to pray about this. It's obvious. Sometimes I catch myself doing this. We have an elders meeting. And sometimes I look through the agenda, I scan through it, and I think, nothing too big there. All seems quite straightforward. Let's just crack on and go through the agenda, and then we can go home early. And I forget. Stop. Pause. Pray. We do need God's wisdom. We do need his insight. Because there could be something here that we miss. Or I find it happens to me when I'm starting to prepare a sermon, especially if the Bible passage is familiar. I think, I know that Bible passage. I grew up reading that Bible passage. It's obvious. And let's just rush on and get the sermon done. Get it in the bag, sort it, don't have to stress over it. And as soon as that little thought comes in, I can do this, I need to stop and pray and ask for insight. Because there could be stuff in there that I miss. One Bible commentator puts it like this: we must beware of the subtle unbelief that assumes I have this under control. Because sometimes it is. It's like it reveals our hearts. I am in control. I can do this. I don't need God. I remember one time when I was younger, it was a Friday night. I'd been to our youth group that the church ran back in Dunstable. And it was one of those lovely, warm summer evenings that just continues to be light for ages and ages till 10:30, 11:00. We were walking back from the recreation ground where we played some football or something. And I was feeling quite hyper, as I often was. And I thought it'd be a good idea to climb the top of the gates to the recreation ground and jump off. They were fairly old-fashioned sort of cast iron gates. There was a whole fence around it. Big sort of 5-6 foot tall gates with spikes on the top and a rail there. So I climbed to the top and thought, I'm going to jump off now. And I distinctly remember that kind of psychological feeling before jumping, thinking, I can do this. Anyway, I jumped, but my trousers caught on the spikes So I kind of just flipped, my head hit the pavement, and momentarily for about 2 seconds I was suspended upside down until my trousers ripped and I collapsed in a heap on the pavement. And it was more kind of, my pride was more dented than my forehead, thankfully. But I just remember that feeling. I've got this. I can do this. Forgetting about the spikes and my, it was baggy trousers then. So they got caught. Be fine now with skinny jeans being in fashion. But beware when you think to yourself, I can do this. I've got this sorted. I know what to do in this decision, this path in way in front of me in my life. Joshua 9 is a passage that warns us against cocksure independence. Here's a quote from Dale Ralph Davis. We need not only power from God to overwhelm our enemies, but wisdom from God to detect our subtle enemies and to know the right course of action. And that's so true because of our adversary, the devil, right? He does come as a roaring lion, and roaring lions are quite obvious, right? But he also comes subtly, like he did with Eve in the garden. He is the deceiver. He does what the Gibeonites do, brings a ruse to us, makes us think, that's okay, I can do that. So that's why we need that wisdom before we're making decisions, before we rush in, before we think we can do it. But this story ends on a good note, thankfully. Yes, a mistake has been made. Yes, they neglected to ask God. But the mistake is redeemed and fixed. So the second takeaway is be humble, admit your mistake, and take responsibility. Because that's what Joshua and the leaders do. They admit their mistake. We see this in verse 19. The whole assembly grumbled against the leaders. But all the leaders answered, we have given them our oath. So they say, we made a treaty. We did do it. It was us. We agreed it with them. And that's why they can't touch them. That's why they can't attack. That must have been so hard for Joshua to admit, the new leader. Especially because of Numbers 27, verse 21, which says, these are the instructions for Joshua as he's going to become leader. Joshua is to stand before Eleazar the priest, who will obtain decisions for him by inquiring of the Urim before the Lord. The Urim was a way to ask for guidance from God. At his command, he and the entire community of the Israelites will go out, and at his command they will come in. So he was told by Moses, don't forget, inquire of the Lord, go into the priest before you make decisions. It must have been so humiliating for him to stand before the Israelites saying, I made the treaty, and thinking, because I didn't ask God. But he did it. He swallowed his pride. This is a word for the elders, I think, isn't it, elders? You know, we're the leaders. We need to sometimes have the humility, always have the humility if we've made a mistake, to admit it. But not only do they admit their mistake, but they honourably and obediently uphold their prayerless treaty. See that in verse 18. But the Israelites did not attack them because the leaders of the assembly had sworn an oath to them by the Lord, the God of Israel. So they kept the oath. They did the right thing. And then they took responsibility for this mistake that had been made. And the responsible action they took was a plan that limited the negative effects of their blunder. We see that in verse 21. They continued, let the Gibeonites live, but let them be woodcutters and water carriers in the service of the whole assembly. So the leaders promised to them was kept. And this produced a good result. Warren Wiersbe reckons that the phrase temple servants in these passages, that refers to the Gibeonites, because this phrase, temple servants, the Hebrew word for that phrase means given ones. So he reckons that the Gibeonites just ended up kind of serving in the temple and doing those jobs like cutting wood and for the sacrifices and water and all that kind of stuff. And being temple servants meant that they would naturally acquire knowledge of the true God, and in assisting the worship of Yahweh, they would hopefully turn to him instead of turning to pagan idols false gods. So there was a good result. So when we make a mistake, which we will do, which we often will do because we're human, or if we forget to pray for guidance and we rush into a decision and then regret it, let's be humble. Let's admit that and let's do the right thing and take responsibility. We may well be caught up, maybe some of us are at the moment, caught up in the consequences of our own prayerlessness, our own arrogance, our own thoughtlessness. If that's the case, yes, we need to repent. And yes, God will forgive us for our stupidity and our sin. But we also need to do the right thing and take responsibility and live obediently in the midst of the mess that we've made. Thank God that this situation ended well in Joshua 9. And take heart that with humility, it's possible to turn around our mistakes and to redeem our blunders.